Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 68, Physiology, Part 7. I'm going to speak about the lungs and breathing, but I also want to say a couple more things about the heart. It's very hard to get away from the heart. About the muscles of the heart. Here's another indication that things are not so simple, one side or the other. What kind of muscle does the heart have? Well, what kind of muscle do we have altogether? We have the so-called non-striated, involuntary muscles, the broad muscles that we have in our stomach and our diaphragm. Wherever things have to go on, wherever there are physiological functions that must go on without our interference, because we are clueless about how to make all of that stuff work, those are involuntary muscles. They function by themselves. They have an inherent wisdom. And the heart actually has a lot to do with this wisdom and how these muscles are functioning. And then we have the muscles better known to us, that particularly the adolescent boys, and more and more nowadays the girls as well are very interested in. And these are the voluntary muscles, the striated muscles in our arms and our legs, where we do have control over these, and we have to will that we're going to do something for those muscles to start functioning, by and large. What kind of muscles does the heart have? Well, look in a book and you'll be told it's cardiac muscle. It's a little like both voluntary and involuntary. Another way of saying that, which does not in any way counter scientific evidence, is that the heart has both kinds of muscles. That the heart is inherently a voluntary muscle as well as an involuntary muscle. Why would we be given a muscle that could be actually used as a voluntary muscle if the chips were down? In the heart, the muscle of all muscles that we need to have the least control over because it's so totally vital, and if it malfunctions in the slightest way, we are done for. So why is there a voluntary quality to the muscles? Just ask that question. That's all I say. Could it be, because the heart is indeed so connected to our life of feeling, it's so sensitive to all that we carry, we might say in our own terminology, in the astral body, that in fact it's so sensitive to the astral body that we need a new heart at this age when the astral body is incorporating. The old one wouldn't have been tough enough, as it were, resilient enough to deal with the ups and downs of the astral life, and the heart just keeps on ticking, as they say. But it's affected by all of that. Could it be that our feelings today, our emotions rather, to be more accurate, rise up of their own accord, and it takes a whole lot of work to control them? And sometimes we can't. We need others to help us control our emotions. Our emotional life is basically a kind of mess. Our feeling life, okay, we take hold of that, and you know, we can write poetry and channel our feelings and control it, creative writing again, drawing, painting, wonderful. Can it be that in the distant future, as Steiner tells us, we are going to be able to control our feelings completely? This he calls spirit self. When the ego is completely penetrating the astral body, and the astral body is within our control, we can take hold of it. That will be the first part of our being that we will take hold of. Eventually, as you'll hear in the lectures in the Steiner course, we'll take hold of our etheric body and finally our physical body as well. So we are already beginning that task. We are already working on the transformation of our astral body. That's why we're given sentient soul, mind soul, and consciousness soul. Those are all stages, very beginnings in that eventual complete transformation. And one day, therefore, the heart will be a voluntary organ. We will be controlling the flow of our blood. We will be taking on consciously the wisdom that is now kept from us because we are basically such a mess of emotions. We will take hold of our own heart. And that heart will be as voluntary as lifting our arm, clenching our fist, releasing our hand, drawing, writing, whatever. So that's a thought to have as well. So that's the final thought on the heart. I am not telling you, please, I'm not saying teach this to the children, but I am saying if you ponder some of these things while you're studying your physiology texts and getting ready for the class, if you carry these thoughts and you make them your own, if you feel they're worth carrying, they're worth entertaining, considering, if you walk into a physiology class with these thoughts living within you, I assure you, it will be much more exciting and much more meaningful for the children. Even though this may be the first time you've ever taught physiology, maybe the first time you've ever learned physiology, except in a first aid course or something like that, you can do it if you are really carrying thoughts about the human being as a being of soul and spirit, and not just as a collection of mechanical, electronic, computerized devices that happen to work together reasonably well. Okay, on to the lungs. Now, one last aspect of the heart, you'll see this in the student work, you'll see that they have made lists of the heartbeat of various animals compared to human heartbeat. And especially for those who like numbers and who like making graphs and charts, this can be a great thing. It's not, you may not even want everybody to do it, but just have a few of the math students or anyone else interested in compiling such a list and representing it artistically or graphically. And it's so interesting for them to see the difference between the smallest animals, like a hummingbird and its heartbeat, and the largest animals, like an elephant and its heartbeat, and to see the human being there with the 70, 72 beats a minute in the middle, and what's closest, the dog. The dog is a man's best friend, and you can understand why we feel such a kinship with a dog, especially on the level of feeling, you know, that a dog knows how you're feeling, and a dog anticipates what you're about to do. And of course, it has a lot to do with what they're picking up, with the sense of smell. But it's not only that, it's also that they are very close to us, that, you know, we know dogs don't really understand complete sentences, but they are picking up on the feeling that we have in that sentence. Our heart and their heart meet, because they are beating at the same pace. So that it's a magical number, that 70, that 72 beats a minute. And in that minute, of course, all of the blood in our body has moved through the heart. You know that there's a minute is a true measure of time. It is a true human measure of time. And probably the second should be more like a 70th of a minute if it was really going to be accurate, but it's close enough. So we see what we learned in grade 3 with time telling, that goes very, very deeply into us, that our body is a clock. And when Galileo, for example, was doing his experiments in acceleration and how quickly things move down an inclined plane or how long it takes to drop something heavy from the Tower of Pisa, how did he measure the time? There were no accurate second piece, you know, clocks that could tick by the second in those days. He used his pulse. So we are a clock. We should be. We were created in Saturn, Saturn evolution, where time began. So anyway, that's very interesting to the children. And then, no less interesting, at this age where they're all getting so interested in athletics and sports to see the heartbeat of different athletes. So here we already see that, yeah, there is a kind of voluntary quality to that heart muscle, that indirectly, through exercises that we do and through building up our stamina and our perseverance and so on, we actually are already working on our heart and controlling it in a way, and we can slow it down so that when we are moving really quickly and putting great demands on it, only then does it start to move to the normal rate. And with that, then, it's able to last longer, hold itself longer. So, and in fact, because basketball, the most popular of all Waldorf sports, does require such endless running and running and running, you know, it's such an action sport, then it's very good for students to see. They, in their basketball practice, they may unknowingly be slowing down their heartbeat. And another sport that's becoming increasingly popular, at least in schools that have the fields or access to a big field, is a track. Track is becoming more and more popular because it's non-combative, non-contact sport. You don't need a whole lot of expensive equipment to have a track team. And because it also speaks to the individuality of the Waldorf student, who may not always want to do everything team, team, team. Here you're on a team, but you're also performing on your own as well. So it has a lot of things that, you know, really endear it to a young Waldorf school. But I would say, look at the chart in that book, and you see how the sprinter, how the person who's a runner slows down their heart the most. Now, when you're doing that, what is your heartbeat like? It's like that more of an animal. You know, it's not the archetypal human heartbeat, which means it shows us in a very strong form that to become a really good athlete, you are animalizing your heart. Okay, I pause pregnantly after I say that. You know, you say anything about sports, and I've already lost the audience of all the guys who were listening to this conference for seventh grade. I appreciate the teams. I appreciate the spirit that rises. It's great sometimes for the more sluggish kids to get out there and all of that. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But be very careful, because you are also bringing an animalistic, and I will say that, you know, unabashedly, an animalistic quality into your class. You're bringing an astralizing in order for the body to be able to function in the demands of sports.